But oh, he was a, I was told that by Mrs. Blagg, she was a shareholder too, and about her father, that on Christmas he would put on his kilt and his tam o' shanter hat and go around and give the kids candy canes or something and wish them Merry Christmas. That was a long time ago, and he's buried in the Saldovia Cemetery, and she lives outside someplace, but you could talk to her about it. She's a shareholder, so that would be good.
Now, did you two meet in Saldovia, or did you come to Saldovia together?
He's been here a lot longer than me. I was going with Norman Kashverov, who went to Seward to go to school because he had taken all the classes that they had here. Mm-hmm. So for his senior year, he went to Seward to go to school, and that's where I met him. I was going to school in Seward. I grew up there. Mm-hmm. And then John came over to visit him, and that's when I first met him. But
so and you actually met in Seward when mm-hmm. you came
when I first met him, yeah.
Okay.
Because I lived in Seward, and then... But he and Norman were best friends, and...
But that's not the way I remember it.
Oh, how do you remember it?
I remember he had a girlfriend that was going to go to school over there with her, and then he had to go over there because she was over there.
But yeah, that was a different girlfriend than me. That was Pauline
McNeekin.
That's
right.
I know. Yeah, he went over
as well. It wasn't because of the classes.
That's what he told me, that... I hope you're going to edit this thing, are you? Yes, he did. He went over there to go to school with Pauline McMeekin, but he told me that he'd taken all the classes
well,
they had here.
Yeah.
And then he and Pauline broke up, and he started going with me. And then you came over to visit. But anyway. And then, you know my kids. And I was married to Norman for 15 years, and we divorced. And then I married John. So now he's grandpa and father. And
it's funny, too, when he came back from Seward over there one time. Told me that you said I was crazy.
I thought you were telling weird jokes. Now listen, they might put this on the air, so watch out what you say.
That's the way I remember it.
Well, yeah, I thought you were crazy, but crazy funny or something.
I haven't changed any.
No.
Yeah.
John, where were you born and when and how did you come to Saldovia?
Oh, born in McGrath on the Kuskokwim River. Not in McGrath. My dad was hunting beaver up there then in Namus. In beaver camp. And I guess that's where... There's no hospital up there anyway. Came here, and then we went to Fairbanks for a winter. And then in 1939, we moved to Anchorage. And lived in Anchorage till after the Second World War. And in 1945, in August, we came to Saldovia, and it was Mike Miller's dad had an airplane then, and he's the one that brought me and my mom and my two sisters down in his airplane. He had a flight service here then, so that's how I got here.
And so what brought your family to Saldovia?
That airplane and Mike Miller's dad.
See, crazy. Okay.
Maybe I should say, why did your family decide to get on an airplane and go to Saldovia and then stay?
Well, okay, you got time. This, we had a friend that was named Earl Halstead, and he had come down and spent a winter down here. He was living in Anchorage at the time. He came down and spent the winter down here, and it must have been one almost like last year, because when he came back to Anchorage and said he was going to move down here, he told us about this winter. They didn't have much snow all winter long, and it was nice weather. And if you do decide to go, don't bring your sleds and skates and any winter stuff. And got Dad all excited about it. Dad came down and looked at it, and the canneries were working, lots of employment in the summer. So he came down and went on a tender, and then we came, the rest of the family, in August on that plane and stayed here then, been here ever since.
So was that the first flight service in Saldovia?
I don't think so.
You think there were planes before that?
There was a plane, well, let's see, Red Red Harrington had a plane, and he used to land up on Raby Spit for his airport. And then they used to go up there with a skiff and pick people up. That's the first, well, Dick Miller, he just landed on the beach here. I don't remember where he kept his plane.
That was before the airport was built.
Yeah, that was in 45. Airplane wasn't built until 50.
The airport?
Or 51.
Sorry, I'm just checking. So what did your family do here? Fish or work in the canneries or some of that?
Well, Dad worked on the tenders, and then he bought himself a little boat and fixed that up, and then he started fishing and working on the tennis ladies on the boats. Winter time, I don't know. He did a little machine work, but when we first came, he didn't have a shop then. Winter time, nobody did much of anything except run around and make each other miserable, I guess.
So how old were you when you came here?
9 or 10.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you went to school here?
Yeah, territorial school.
Okay. Probably it started in Anchorage and then finished up.
Yeah, I was in third grade when I started, when I got here.
Mm-hmm. Any particular memories of being in school here? How it might be different for the school kids today?
I don't know. I don't. What would stand out? Some of the teachers, they just all got old and moved away.
How many kids were in your graduating class?
5. In the graduation, but in the I think on the went to the 4th grade twice because we went out to lived outside for one winter and missed a lot of school.
Did most kids go all the way through school and finish, or did they usually stop a little bit short of graduating?
When I started school there, there was a high school. Why is it that time? All went fishing, and so they all quit early in the spring, and it seemed like after the maybe they get a couple of years of high school, and I don't remember any of them classes graduating until later on, of the ones that were in high school here with Patty Kohlberg and her older sister Midge Gruber and some other, I don't know them. The Fox girls, all those girls, and Anton Anderson and Charlie Nelson. And
so they did graduate?
Not that I recall. Some of them might have, but I think they went someplace else and graduated or something. I don't remember ever going to any graduation till later on. I don't remember. They never, I guess, had much of a ceremony.
You graduated in 55?
55, yeah.
So when you weren't in school, did you have time to run around and be a kid, or were you working a lot?
Oh, we were in trouble a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Just not enough for kids to do, and it's always in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Something. I don't remember the specifics, but it seemed like I was on restriction more than I was out running around.
Did you have any favorite places you liked to go when you were a kid?
Yeah, we used to like to hike up the bay a lot. The outside beach, I guess, was kind of the most popular because we could go out there and pick bedarkies and cook them and shoot a duck and roast them. Mm-hmm. That kind of stuff. But yeah, it was kind of the favorite spots, I guess.
Did
seems like it used to take us a little longer to get out there than it does now.
You probably walked all the way, right?
Yeah.
Didn't go by skiff or anything?
When we first came to town, there was one automobile here, one old convertible type car.
Do you remember whose that was?
I don't remember whose it was. I know we rode in it once, and I think Harvey Cook drove it. It was parked in school manual training building down below that. Well, right about where Bev's trailer was there. There was a shed there that the car was kept in. I think they used it one year to haul coal to the school too or something.
And how far could you actually drive it? I mean, how far out did the road go at that point?
Graveyard, I guess.
Mm-hmm. About where the graveyard is now? It's about the end of the road?
Yeah. Okay. There was no road on the other side of Slough.
So when did that road go in? Jack Loft Bay Road.
What year did they bring the trailers to town? Mm-hmm. The logging company.
Late 60s.
65, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was after the earthquake, anyway, when the road came in.
In the late 50s, when my kids were little, there was a two-lane road to the beach because we used to pull them in a wagon. But all it
two
was.
Two lanes for your
well,
wagon.
I mean, two tire tracks in the grass.
Two lanes, yeah.
I mean, not two lanes, two
wagon
tire tracks.
Size.
And people would pull their kids in wagons and go out to the beach because they could swim in the swimming hole then because it was fresh water. And
the swimming hole. Mm-hmm. This is the first I've heard of the swimming hole.
It's just as you go out there mm-hmm. and you get by the Missionary Baptist Church there and keep going, turn left, that is the swimming hole.
Lake Irene.
Okay.
Lake Irene. But after the earthquake, we sank and tide water came in and then it got cold. But it used to be warm because it was shallow. Mm-hmm. And all the kids used to swim. And even kids in his days and older, because we have a picture of people out there really long time ago swimming.
Okay. Yeah. So the Jackal Bay Road was that kind of part of the whole urban renewal project then?
No, no.
Maybe at the same time.
It was part of the
logging operation out there.
Logging, state timber sale out in the Rocky River area.
South Central Timber bought timber out there, and they did it. And then loggers would come to town, but then at one point, they used to live in a trailer court out there, which Michael ended up cleaning up, right, the trailer court years ago. And then they moved, the school bus used to go out and get the kids, but then they most of them moved to town, and it had a trailer park down there where the new building is, you know, where Wakefield's was. But that was trailer park, and the loggers lived here. Back then, there were 170 kids in school, and now there's 40. But when Crystal and my kids were in school, there was 170 kids in school, and a lot of them were loggers. Came up from Idaho and lived here and had their families.
How long did that go on?
Hmm. What, the school?
The loggers in the 70s.
70-something.
70-something. They were through logging, and then those people left. But that was a nice boost to the town. A lot of people to work in the cannery then. I was plant accountant at Wakefield's. And the biggest amount we ever had was 100 people working one summer because college kids would come back and work. King crab was in the heyday then, and snow crab, and we needed a lot of workers. And the loggers, women, some of them would work, and the local women, and that was a big group. Usually we'd have 40 people working, which nowadays I don't think you could get 40 people to go to work in town. There isn't that much labor force anymore. So
were those plants running 24 hours a day?
No, Wakefield's, no, they didn't. They just ran during the day, about 6 days a week, or seven if they had to. But in the boats, first they used to get king crab out in Kashimak Bay, and then when that kind of went out, they went farther away, and I worked there from, well, up until 75, from 60, 67 or something. Before that, I was city clerk treasurer for about 6 years, worked for the city, so. And then I went to work for SNA in 75 and worked till 2007.
And that was when SNA began, right?
They began like in 72 or 73. Okay. But,
yeah. Did SNA come first, or did the tribe come first? Or did
SNA came first.
Can you talk a little bit about how that began in that process?
Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Mm-hmm. Created the corporations.
North Slope Oil.
Yeah. Yeah,
they had to get the oil from the North Slope to the market, so they had to cross the native lands, so they had to settle the land settlement for.
Mm-hmm. That's what did it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of native leaders that were working hard on it. And so then it was quite a while after the corporation was going that they looked into tribes, because Seldovia had been declared a tribe, but there was nothing. In fact, when SNA first became a corporation, even there was a person in town who said that it wasn't a native village. And I remember I was still working for the cannery then, but I was a notary, and I notarized at least 25 statements of people saying that they were native and they had lived here a long time and stuff like that, because they had to prove that there were, it was a native village. Mm-hmm. And then worked out for the corporation to be a native corporation. Mm-hmm. And that was Jack English that fought against it, but he was magistrate at the time. Mm-hmm. But
so this is just kind of my ignorance with the law. I know that, you know, the Angs are, you know, created the framework for the corporations, but mm-hmm. did people in Seldovia have to say there will be one here and kind of do it from the ground up, or did the state kind of say, okay, here's...
Not the state. It was the federal government. Okay. No, the people...
So the federal government designated exactly what all the corporations should be?
I think they just named them, didn't they?
They had to apply, yeah.
Yeah, and so the local natives applied. And
under the act.
So who kind of took the leadership from the Seldovia side to make that happen?
Cleo Swick, Fred.
Elsass, Sr.
Elsass.
Helen Josephson.
Helen.
Joe Carlo. They were the original incorporators on the Articles of Incorporation. And then shortly thereafter, John was on the board, and he was chairman of the board for about 20-some years, weren't you?
Close, I guess.
And over the years, different ones have, you know, have gotten on over the thing. And I was working at Wakefield's at the time, and Fred Elsass talked me into quitting my Wakefield's job and coming to work for the corporation to do their books. Mm-hmm. And so I did, because my kids were shareholders, and I wanted to make sure the money was well taken care of. So I did that for 32 years and watched their money. And but Fred was the president of corporation for about 25 years. And then president was also like general manager. Mm-hmm. And it used to be only two of us. Mm-hmm. And then different things happened. And then they got what was Bill Spencer called? He was a worker anyway that helped, and then later Michael Beale came on as CEO. They went from president to CEO style. The president didn't do the actual work anymore. It was they hired a CEO. Mm-hmm. So, but I was there for a long time.
And then how about the formation of the tribe? What was kind of the
that took a lot took a lot of work to. Wow. Spent a lot of time on that. PIA sent us a person over to kind of help us get started with our constitution. We had to write a constitution, and it had to meet a lot of requirements.
And the Native Corporation did a lot of the work to
work it through Congress took quite a while, but the BIA assisted, so it was just getting all the right paperwork together to be a recognized tribe under that law.
And the corporation wanted it because they were the profit arm and the tribe could do the nonprofit things and get the grants and all. And Crystal Collier started at the beginning and she's been there for 20-some years. So, and the tribe has grown greatly.
So is that a lot of the same people that kind of initiated that effort? Mm-hmm. Initiated the association?
Mm-hmm. Because there's just, I mean, there was just always a small group here that worked and did things. So, and then the corporation did logging and, you know, things like that, and did the grocery store. Mm-hmm. Started an 8A.
I'm sorry.
Started an 8A corporation in the States and different things. Mm-hmm. So the corporation did a lot of things.
8A, is that a tax?
It's under the federal government.
Okay.
Section 8A of some act.
Okay.
A minority business.
Okay.
Women, tribes, you know, different racial things can do an 8A. Mm-hmm. So. You have any questions, Michael? From a local view?
I'm just here as the eye candy.
Oh, okay. happy. Okay.
So what would you say are some of the biggest changes you see in Sylvania now versus when you first arrived here? Either, you know, in the physical appearance of the town or the population or the culture, whatever.
Physical appearance has definitely changed. I first came in 57, just for the summers, and moved here in 59, and he's been here so long. Of course, there was the boardwalk when you were here, and that was the boardwalk, and you'd take your kids in the stroller down the street. It'd take you 2 hours to get to the post office because the old men would lean against the railings and you had to stop and talk to them all and they had to pinch the kids' cheeks. And it was just a good visit every day when you went out. And
hasn't changed much.
Yeah, really. Nowadays, people meet in the post office and say hi. And that used to be there. But it used to be along the boardwalk because the old guys would lean back on the boardwalk and talk to everybody that went by. It was... Seldovia was a friendly town, and it still is. So there were things to do. We used to have Pinnacle Club, and the women had a women's club, and there was things to do in the evenings and stuff, and everybody had little kids. And then we were involved at the school with PTA and things like that. And really, Seldovia got a new school like in the early 70s. Crystal was just going into high school then, I think, and my other kids were in there. But Seldovia, the new Seldovia school, looks a lot like it did when it was brand new because the kids have always taken care of it. They never did graffiti on it. You know, you were in that school, Michael, and the kids always took care of the school, right? It was a source of pride, I guess, and that school is in really good shape. And they experimented with Seldovia a lot. At first, they tried open classroom when the school was first built. And it just, they realized it was too noisy and everything like that, so they built a few walls and made a few classrooms because experimented with us. Then later, the new math came out, and we had that, and a lot of parents complained because it was really stupid. And after a couple of years, they went back to regular math. And then a few years ago, they tried... what do you call it, standards-based grading or something without ABCD? Parents complained about that, but it was there for a couple years, and now that's gone. But it seems like every time the borough wants to try something, they use Seldovia as a guinea pig, because that standards-based grading was only Seldovia and one other charter school or something, and it really was not successful here, and the parents didn't like it. In fact, that one year, there were 40 kids in school and 16 kids homeschooled. People were not happy with the school. But I'm encouraged with the new principal and all. I think it's going to be good. Yeah,
that's one thing that's really stood out to me in the short time I've been here is how central to the community the school is.
Mm-hmm.
With the previous schools, was that the case also?
Yes, it always has been. We fought for the school. When the borough was talking about swimming pools, And we lobbied for Seldovia because Gary Allen had drowned here, a guy had drowned, different people had drowned. And we told them that our kids needed to learn to swim because by then we had no swimming pool. It was tide come in and all that. And we were the first school in the borough to get a swimming pool with much lobbying. And so and then they've had swimming lessons all the time, and all the kids know how to swim now if they fell overboard. But different things. We used to have community schools program where we could use the school, and we had all kinds of classes, kind of like arts council is doing now, but we had all kinds of classes that the adults would go. We even used to have college at school, depending on who the thing is. I took a lot of classes, college classes there in the evenings. And if the administrator was, or the principal was able to teach it, then we could have college classes with KPC in Homer. And so different people took college classes at school. And we've always, you know, pushed for the school. John was on the Brew Assembly, and they had a really weird floor up there, kind of a rubber floor in the gym. And as assemblyman, he pushed for and got them the floor they've got now. We've got a big sign at home that all the kids have signed. Thank you, Mr. Crawford, for our new floor. That was a lot of years ago. But, you know, we've always... The school has been an integral part of the community. Mm-hmm. And it was named for Susan English, mm-hmm. who was on the school board for 40-some years, and she fought for the school.
She was the school board.
She was the school board, probably, yes. Well, Daisy Linstead was on it, too.
In territorial days.
Mm-hmm. And so the school has been an important part. And it had high academic things, put out some smart kids. Right, Michael? He knows. He graduated there. But, yeah, it was good. So it's a source of pride for the community.
Mm-hmm. You know, I know the first big school that was built, I believe it was down by where the multipurpose building is now. And then when the second school was built, that one was enlarged, and that kind of became a previous multipurpose building. Was that still in use when you were here?
The first school was the Russian church.
Yeah, but then there was one that was built.
That was the city office. Yeah, right. It was a city thing. Yeah,
it's in one of your photos.
Hmm? Was that still in use until the earthquake? That's one thing I've had a hard time.
No.
They were up. There was another school up there that got torn down. That was right next to where the gym, not the gym, but the multipurpose building is up there.
Manual training.
That was there. And that's where my kids started in school, in that building.
It's that's where I graduated.
When that school was built, this school, or this now former school, then was enlarged and had, I think, the library and Jack English's office and some other things.
That was a federal school, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't
BIA
know.
School.
I don't know that it was enlarged. I think just other things took it over. Mm-hmm. But.
So was that building still in use when you came to town?
Yeah.
Yeah. They had dances in it and stuff, and
that didn't go out till earthquake time.
Okay.
Yeah, they took that down.
Mm-hmm. And so was that kind of the inspiration for
that was
the multi-purpose building?
Where the clinic is now.
No, I think the city just wanted to have a place to have council meetings and stuff. I was mayor at the time, and okay. I got to dedicate the building. Mm-hmm. And when it finally opened, Hugh Smith built it, and it took a couple years, but he did a good job with local workers, and the fact that we needed a place because the hospital then was no longer in use. Before, we had a doctor in the hospital, and that was sold. Jerry Willard lived there, and then it was a place for the clinic and a place for the fire hall, a place for all this stuff in one place, mm-hmm. was the reason it was all together.
So what year did you become mayor?
I was mayor for 1 year in 1970 when I was on the council. At that point, the mayor was just chosen from the council, and that was only 1 year. And then I was through in 85, so I must have started in about 78. I was on my third term, but I didn't finish it because we moved out of town, found a house out of town. We used to live on the corner of Lipke and Main, mm-hmm. and a one-story house came to town, and we bought it. And then I was doing ceramics. Upstairs in the kitchen, there wasn't enough room, and so John raised the house up, put cement blocks around it, raised the house, and fixed the basement. And everyone was giving him a bad time, saying, gee, John, usually people build a basement before they put the house on it. But he raised the house and built the basement, and then I had a ceramic shop there for 3 years. I was still working at SNA, so I only did it in the evenings and weekends. But I only did that for about 3 years. And there's been a lot of politics in town, mm-hmm. and I was mayor at the time, and the fishermen were mad because the city started taxing their boats, and Lou Collier was also on the city council, and so the fishermen were mad and told their wives they couldn't go to the ceramic shop and they couldn't go to the Centurion to eat. They boycotted it.
What was the Centurion?
Centurion was, Lou Collier built that restaurant, where the Mad Fish is now.
Okay.
That was the Centurion. Lou and Marion Collier built that, and Lou had it there. And it was a good restaurant. He's a good cook. And he had that for years. Then he sold it, and they retired.
Okay.
But a fisherman were mad because the city started taxing their boats, but they hadn't been taxed. It's not as high a tax as on the house, but the city needed the money, so... Then we had other political snafus when we had dog leashing. That was when I was mayor, too. A lot of angry people would come to city council meeting. But we did some good things. We got a beautification grant, and all this beautification was started back then, mm-hmm. and it's continued. And we did house numbering and things like that. So we did a lot of good things. But there's always a lot of politics in a small town.
Mm-hmm. So after urban renewal, you know, when the buildings were raised, the boardwalk was raised, you know, Phil came in, what was the process like of then starting to rebuild the main street of town?
It took about 20 years before somebody started buying lots, except for the ones that bought lots right as they did the project, like where the post office and the Linwood.
And the theater.
And this store here. And the cannery. We're the first that came back into that. And then it was about 20 years before the property started. I think we bought the first house on it.
Mm-hmm.
Where that down
the on corner of Lipkin Lane.
Before they finally got to where they were affordable, I guess. Inflation finally made them
that was
reasonable
another,
price.
That was another political snafu. Salvation Army came in and raised where the boardwalk is now, raised that boardwalk and raised those houses. They said they were willing to do it for the whole town. But urban renewal came in, and some people misunderstood, and they thought urban renewal would tear down everything and then build everything again. And that wasn't what they were saying, but a lot of people thought it was. And so there was a lot of arguing and everything. They had an election, and the election was pretty close about whether or not to have urban renewal. And they did have urban renewal. Dick and Galima was mayor at the time. I was city clerk. And he didn't want it to be. His place had been raised. And he wanted the town to go on like it was. But they ended up selling and moving to Homer. Mm-hmm. So all the people that sold, the Beachcomber Hotel sold, they never came back. The cannery sold, they never came back. Except for Wakefield Fisheries, they did. But we had 5 canneries in town. They took their money and left. And the economy of the town went down. And the Englishes were real unhappy about urban renewal. And there was just some people in town that were real unhappy with it. Englishes did stay, and they did buy they bought the post office area because they had the contract and had their little newsstand there and all that. But they were not happy with it. And it just took a long time. And then some of the people were real surprised, like, oh, wow, now we have this. It was like an airport in town because it was open and flat. And some people were surprised that, wow, nobody's coming in to build us buildings. And that wasn't the way it was. But so some people left and some people stayed. And the hurts were there for a long time with some people.
Did most people go to Homer, or did they kind of go all over?
One of the canneries went to Port Graham. I don't know about the other ones.
Kodiak.
Yeah. And Inglemas went to Homer. But I don't know where the hotel guy probably just left. Beachcomber Hotel. But it was...
He went to the old folks' home. Luke.
Oh, Luke Fisher, yeah. That was a hotel, too. But anyway, it changed the economy of Saldovia. But then Wakefield Fisheries started again. And they were the only cannery. Because we used to have salmon and halibut and a lot of...
I don't think they did canned salmon there one time, I guess.
Well, Wakefield Fisheries did it for quite a while, and then they sold it to Norton Simon.
I don't think they canned much.
Mm-mm, they didn't can. It was frozen product. And then Norton Simon sold it to a company named John Cabot. And then it just really went downhill from there. And then I heard that some guy bought it who needed to have a shore plant so he could have a offshore processing ship. So this was his shore plant, but he never utilized it. So the economy in town got really low because there wasn't much else to work. Now the tribe is the biggest employer in town and has brought a boon to Saldovia. But otherwise, except for the school, there aren't many places that hire a lot of people. So, but Saldovia has changed a lot. And I remember when I've been on the Chamber of Commerce for 50 years or so, and when we first started trying to do tourism and inviting people in, there were a lot of people that didn't want tourists to come in. And it's kind of funny now, because now some of the people that came in recently don't want things to come in, like heli skiing and things like that. You know, it's like, I'm here now, shut the door. I want it to stay the way it is. But this town cannot continue to operate if we don't have economy. And right now, without a lot of canneries and things like that, it seems like tourism and having people come in and having gift stores and things like that is one of the ways to make money.
If you've got a good job so you can support it.
Right. That's another thing. And I tell people that. I was working when I had the ceramic shop. You almost have to have a job so you can afford to have a business in Saldovia, because there aren't enough people here. I've seen in books that Saldovia used to have 2,000 people, and I do not think that's correct. 700 to 800 people, maybe. And back then, we weren't even living off the road. Like now in Saldovia Village, there's several hundred people out there. In fact, there's like only 30 difference in the last census between the amount of people that live in town and the amount of people that live out there. And so we have a big community when you count all of them. And I saw a report recently where they were talking about, oh, we've stayed the same, but they're counting the whole thing, not the city. Mm-hmm. And some of those people moved out of town because they were unhappy with the city. Mm-hmm. And not us. I just thought there was too much traffic going by 248 Lipke Lane. Because there were a lot of cars then. When I first came here, when John said there was one car when he came to town, there was four or five when I came to town in 57. George Cook had a taxi. What were those little cars? Austin Healey's or something? They were just tiny little cars.
Yeah, Willie's Jeeps.
Yeah, there was Willie's Jeep. And Rocky had a farm out there, and he had cows, and he would deliver milk. He had this tractor, and on the back was just this little platform. Mm-hmm. And he would drive through town with his little container with his 6 or 8 bottles of milk, glass bottles of milk. He'd drive, and he'd deliver milk.
Was that the farm that was kind of on the slough area?
It's on Fish Creek, okay. Right up there, yeah. On Fish Creek, yeah. Ole Jackson bought it after that, but and I don't know who owns it now, but Rocky, it was Rocky's farm. Mm-hmm. So.
Bell had it when we came.
Bell? Okay. Rocky had it when I came.
And did the gentleman you referred to also have livestock there?
Cows. Mm-hmm. Kind of hard to sell milk without cows.
I wasn't sure if he had the property or if he had
No, yeah. It was a...
But back in those days, I mean, I take pictures all the time now. Back in those days, I had to pay for film and you had to send them away to be developed. I never took a picture of Rocky and his tractor. So many things I wish I would have taken pictures of. But I didn't have much money then and had a bunch of little kids. And you didn't take as many pictures as you take nowadays. Mm-hmm. But there were some fantastic things. But you'll see some in those books. There's one picture especially that I was going to use for the 4th of July poster and I didn't. It's 4th of July in Saldovia, and it's taken from that old school area that you were talking about towards where the theater is now. But Saldovia looks entirely different, and it says underneath the picture 4th of July, so you'll recognize it. But there's some fantastic pictures in those books. So, yeah, Saldovia has changed, and it's different. And it's good to see some of the kids that grew up here coming back now with their families, because for a while everybody was just moving away and staying. We're fortunate Crystal she just went away to college for a few years and came back and been here ever since. But most of the kids, they go away and don't come back. Michael's here, and his sister. But it's good.
That's actually one of the things that most impressed me when I moved here, because I come from a small town where, yeah, I think I graduated from a class of about 70, and I think maybe two of my classmates are there.
Yeah.
And coming here and seeing the generations, yeah, go for a little while and then
come back. Uh-huh. Because
that spoke really well in the town.
They realize it's a good place to raise kids, because kids, when they're very young, can wander all over town safely, and you don't have to, you know, lock up and stuff like that. It's good. I think Saldovia was always like that. When John was talking about getting in trouble, you know, it was things like going under the boardwalk and doing other stuff, shooting at streetlights or something. I heard somebody did that. Sonny Halverson, I guess.
That must have been your relations.
No. But, you know, there wasn't that much to do back then.
Your brother-in-law.
We heard it on TV, yeah. But I think he was with Sonny Halverson. I hope you're editing this. Don't put this on.
So did you find that, you know, when your kids were young, that you could kind of keep track of them without actually having to watch them, because mm-hmm. word would get back to you?
Yes, definitely. And it takes a village to raise a child. If you saw somebody else's kid doing something they shouldn't, you would tell them. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't necessarily tell their mother, but you'd tell the kid and they'd listen to you. And
sure we would.
I did. And other people
That's
told
a different mine. Generation.
Yeah. But did anybody ever tell you, Michael? Other parents?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the way Saldovia was. You looked out for, you know, it was like one big family kind of. Arguments and everything, and you could argue real hotly in a council meeting, and then you'd get out of the council meeting and everybody would be friends again. Go out and have a beer together or something. Mm-hmm. But it's just a friendly town and just kind of family. And a lot of people were related because there were a lot of generations here and different relations. And I learned when I first came to town not to talk about anybody, because who you were talking to, it was probably their relative. So you don't talk about them because everybody's related. But that is good. And it was nice in 57, 58. I mean, it was so long ago. But the old ladies had tea. And they would visit and they would have tea and cookies. And I was young, but my mother-in-law would take me along. And it was just nice listening to the old ladies talk and have a good conversation with their tea. And then some of them would go work in the cannery and they'd do different things. Because there was a salmon cannery, the halibut, the crab. Mm-hmm. And then the Filipinos were a good addition to town. They worked in the cannery and they would have different things. You got used to their customs and their food and all. And Freddy Keon's, they had a Filipino restaurant, and that was great. Mm-hmm. You could go get adobo and mm-hmm. pancit and different things. So we got kind of more multicultured by the people that lived here. Mm-hmm. So, and Saldovia is mixed up. The corporation here, some corporations up north, I suppose, are more full natives. In Saldovia, there's a lot of quarter natives. And the other quarter being Russian and Filipino and, you know, other things. But everybody was in the area and they kind of got blended together. So there's only a few people out of the original 257 shareholders that were all native. The rest of them were partial. So, but you had to be a quarter to be counted as native. And so everyone in the corporation was at least a quarter. But they had a blend of great other nationalities, mm-hmm. which made for good sharing of culture.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, I know we kept you past your...
Oh, yes. I need to go to prayer meeting. Uh-huh.
I apologize for that.
That's okay. We can do it again someday.
I hope we can.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I know you've got a lot of knowledge and a lot of history here.
Yeah, there's a lot of history.
When we first came here, there was a lot of old retired sailors. Sailors that retired, like Martin Hoganson and Lindstedt.
Carl Lindstedt.
There was quite a number of them that they had these little cabins around. And some of the older ones, well, there was some people that had worked at the Red Mountain Mine also, that whenever they needed a place to stay for the winter, they just take their tent and go over to some beach and put their tent up there and stay there the whole winter, or go cut dory knees. They're a pretty industrious bunch. It seemed like they all liked to party a lot. The only time you'd see them much is when they're staggering down the street, but I guess retired sailors are supposed to do that. So that was, I don't know why, it must have been a good place to live for them too. Some had pensions and some didn't. And
loggers and fishermen like to do that too, because on Saturday night in the bars, the loggers and fishermen would get in fights when they were here.
When the loggers were here. This group would fight this group.
No. They mostly fought amongst their own people. Good entertainment, but it wasn't always, wasn't the fishermen against the logger type thing.
But they'd have Saturday night fights. But Carl Gosta Lindstedt, he was on the city council. He was an old city father, but that's Poikin's father. He was one of these old sailors, and he told me he sailed on the San Salvador, the old schooner, and it was still a big boat when I first came, but now it's nothing but some metal. But he got so he couldn't talk at the end because of something he had, throat cancer or something. But I was city clerk, and he was a city councilman, and he used to come in and tell me stories and stuff. And I wish I would have written him down at the time, because I always said, Carl, we got to get together, and you dictate and I'll type. And because he had so many stories of things that, Seldovia and when he was sailing and coming in here and things like that. But that was a lot of years ago. But I thought it was fascinating that he sailed on that ship.
Yeah. So maybe we can talk to Carl Jr.
Yes, talk to Poikin, because his dad might have told him some of that. Mm-hmm. And he's been here all his life, too. Good. Okay, well, I better go to prayer meeting, so.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming in. And, yeah, so we're doing this for the next several months at least. So
okay.
If you're open to chatting with us again, we'd really appreciate that.
Okay, we'll do it.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye.